This is a Rabble Podcast Network show.
Rabble.ca.
Hi, I'm Wayne McPhail, and I was one of the people that originally started the Rabble Podcast Network, and I think that you should support the Rabble Podcast Network and Rabble.ca because there's no other place where you're going to get such a diversity of voices speaking truth to power.
The Rabble Podcast Network is 10 years old this year. Show your support by going to rabble.ca/donate.
You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO 100.5 FM.
For more than a generation, Canada's newspapers have been bought, sold, consolidated, and shut down. More than 10,000 jobs have been lost. Revenue and leadership has declined precipitously, and the daily newspaper seems headed for extinction. But what comes next? Readers want and need good journalism, but reporters still need to make a living. On November 29th, the People's Co-op Bookstore hosted an event featuring two former Vancouver journalists. Both Mark Edge and Ian Gill have new books out, which look at the huge changes to Canadian media. Mark Edge's book, The News We Deserve, The Transformation of Canada's Media Landscape. He's professor of media and communications at University Canada West in Vancouver.
Well, I'll try and be as ripe and caustic as I can be, but I'd like to start by just mentioning something that Ian wrote in his book, which I was lucky enough to get a copy of back last June, a pre-publication copy, and I devoured it in a couple of sittings and immediately wrote a glowing review, which I was then told I had to hold for 3 months because it wouldn't be published until September. But as a former journalist, Ian revisited basically the business that he had worked in for many years, and he was absolutely astounded at the state of concentration and control, and he had some very caustic and sharp observations to make about that. But he was careful to say that, well, I don't consider myself an industry expert, and I'm certainly not an academic. Well, I do consider myself an industry expert, and I certainly am an academic. And these are things that I've been studying for the past 15 years, ever since I wrote my dissertation on Pacific Press, the unholy alliance between the Vancouver Sun and province, which has now gone to the next level with the merging of newsrooms by Post Media. Not just in Vancouver, but across the country, in the Calgary, Edmonton, Ottawa, despite promises not to do so when they acquired the Sun Media chain, which was the second largest newspaper company in Canada, being acquired by the first largest newspaper company in Canada. You would have thought that this would prompt at least some sort of public hearings, you know, as occurred when the Vancouver Sun and Province went into partnership together in 1957. There were hearings both in Vancouver and Ottawa. A book-length research study resulted. Of course, nothing ever happened. But and then in 1980, when the Ottawa Journal and the Winnipeg Tribune folded, and the Vancouver Sun was sold by Thompson to Southern, which already owned the province. Well, there was very quickly a Royal Commission on Newspapers called to investigate, and it issued not only a report, but I think 7 or 8 research studies. Even when Southern bought up most of the community newspapers in the Lower Mainland, the newly minted Competition Bureau held hearings, and well, they did make themselves, I think, one of the newspapers, what was it, the Real Estate Weekly or something. Anyway, like I say, you would think that the largest newspaper chain in Canada buying the second largest newspaper chain would prompt some sort of hearings, but no, absolutely nothing resulted. The Competition Bureau, as predicted, rubber-stamped it. Like I say, they had promised not to merge newsrooms in the cities where they owned two newspapers, both newspapers, Vancouver, Calgary, Edmonton, and Ottawa. They also have 2 of the 4 newspapers in Toronto, which is one of the few places in Canada with newspaper competition. For some reason, they didn't merge those. But I just couldn't believe this, that there would be no public hearings. And this is what the entire arc of my research over the previous 15 years had been getting at: issues of ownership, concentration, more recently looking into the profits of newspaper companies, which, believe it or not, they're still making profits. I know they want you to think that they're losing buckets and buckets of money, but they're not. This is what my last book was about, greatly exaggerated, the myth of the death of newspapers, in which I predict that newspapers will be with us, probably post-apocalypse with the cockroaches. They'll be about the second last thing to go, because they're highly profitable. They're highly vertically integrated. They're not as profitable as they used to be, of course, and this is what they're using as an excuse to be able to do all this consolidation. Anyway, so I got a little bit, shall we say, frustrated at this, and I thought, you know, 15 years I've been doing all this research and presenting all these conference papers and writing all these journal articles that nobody reads, and has done absolutely, well, the occasional book, done absolutely nothing to stem the rising tide of this corporate consolidation of our news media. But all my life I'd been either a journalist or a scholar, and both of these roles nominally carry this ethic of objectivity, where you're just supposed to write about things and not actually do anything about them. So I decided that I had to cross over to the other side and actually take action and do something about it. And so I thought, well, what can I do about this? And I thought, well, maybe if I brought my research to the attention of the right people, that something might actually get done. So I thought for a few minutes, and I said, well, who around here might have the power and influence to maybe do something about this? And I thought, well, the Liberals just got elected. And while I don't live in Vancouver Centre, I do work there. So I went and saw the MP for Vancouver Centre, Hedy Fry, who's, I think, the longest serving MP in the government. And I took her a copy of my first book on Pacific Press and told her how the Vancouver Sun and Province promised back in 1957, when they decided to go into business together, that they would forever and ever maintain separate newsrooms. And I gave her a copy of my most recent book at that point, greatly exaggerated, and pointed her to all the data in it showing how newspapers are still making money. And she was aghast. She was as outraged as I was. And so I was quite pleased when, just a few weeks later, they convened federal hearings into the state of the news media in Canada, which Dr. Fry is chairing, and they've been meeting in Ottawa. You can listen in on the interwebs. They archive their audio of their hearings up there, and I've been getting a little bit skeptical that anything may ever result from this. They had representatives of the Competition Bureau up there a few weeks ago, and I thought, well, here's finally a chance to put some hard questions to them. But no, it was all softball type questions, and they said, oh, we can't, this, we do all this confidentially, we couldn't possibly give you any information about the market analysis that we did. I had actually demanded this from them, because I believe it's fundamentally flawed, that they're relying on some bad research, but they wouldn't give me a copy. I went, and when I saw Dr. Fry, I said, can you get me a copy of this? And she said, well, probably not. But they started the hearings instead, and so I'm hoping that something will result from this, but I'm not getting my hopes up too high. So that's one of the reasons I decided to write this book, which is kind of a compilation of my research over the past 15 years, with an introductory chapter talking about the last election just over a year ago, the series of events which saw Post Media order all of its editors at its newspapers across the country to endorse the Harper Conservatives for re-election once again. Then the front page ads, which came wrapped the newspapers from coast to coast, aptly yellow-colored, urging readers to... the ad said, voting NDP or Liberal will cost you, and then a ballot there marked Conservative. And then actually culminated all on Election Day when Andrew Coyne, the editorial page editor of the National Post, resigned because they pulled his column, which didn't endorse the Harper Conservatives. The Post media management said, well, we can't have this sort of disagreement amongst our journalists. Of course, because they're not journalists. And so the tale kind of takes off from there. And then in the concluding chapter, I wrap things up with some of my own recommendations, which I think they first of all have to enforce some of the competition laws. I don't know how they can say if there are two newspapers in a city that they don't actually compete and should be allowed to merge. This is absolutely beyond me. And I have some ideas for tax incentives to encourage local ownership. I think one of the first wrong turns that was made was when local ownership gave way to chain ownership, absentee ownership. I don't go as far as Ian does and recommend subsidies. As an old journalist, I'm just a little bit nervous about anything that might smack of government influence over the news, but I feel that we're almost getting to the point where they can be justified if there are sufficient mechanisms to insulate them. So I think I've used my 10 minutes up, and now it's Ian's turn.
We're listening to excerpts from a talk recorded on November 29th at the People's Co-op Bookstores. The speakers were Mark Edge and Ian Gill. And you're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO 100.5 FM. Right now, we're going to listen to Ian Gill. Ian Gill is a former editor at the Vancouver Sun and is now a columnist with the Taiyi and president of Discourse Media. His book is No News is Bad News, Canada's Media Collapse, and What Comes Next.
The quick history of me was I was a reporter at the Vancouver Sun. I loved the fact that they were not terribly diligent about anything back then, because the only reason I got onto the Vancouver Sun was that I told them I was an editor and was an experienced editor when I arrived from Australia in 1981. And they took, and that was the only job they had at the Vancouver Sun, was as an editor, not as a reporter. So I said, well, I'm an editor. And they said, oh, really? And I said, yeah. And they hired me. And then within like a day, the editor I worked with said, you've never done this before. And I said, no, I haven't. And he said, I'll give you 2 weeks and either figure it out or you're fired. I'm going to rat you out. And then it turned out it wasn't that hard. So I managed to survive at the Vancouver Sun. Whatever you liked or didn't like about the Vancouver Sun at the time, there was a model that existed, actually, that paid for journalism to happen. And the crisis we have at the moment is, I don't think the crisis is that that model has gone away, because it was always a flawed model. I mean, how can you ever imagine that the selling of classified ads and display advertising was a mechanism by which you paid for journalism to happen? That's a weird corporate sort of just coexistence at any level. And there were a lot of tensions built into that level that we all lived and breathed and everything else and survived. But by the same token, you know, how is it that the CBC, a public broadcaster, can also be beholden to advertisers in the same way that market-based broadcasters are, and competing for the same dollar? So there's been a bunch of inherent tensions in the journalism model for about as long as journalism has been going on. And in my book, what I try to do is actually articulate, okay, no news is bad news is the kind of cheap trick of the title. The subtitle, which is Canada's Media Collapse and What Comes Next, is hopefully the more interesting thing. And I don't profess to be smart enough to know exactly what comes next. But there has been a media collapse, there's no doubt about that. Even though it's most of our media are privately owned, I consider this to be sort of public infrastructure. Our media are part of the essential infrastructure of a democratic society. The Knight Foundation in 2009 in the US did an extensive study about the importance of media in relation to democracy, and found very clearly and very concisely, and said, you know, that our media, our access to news and information to make sense of our world, are as important to our democracy and to the function of our societies as electricity, your clean water, your firefighters and everything else. There are basic things that we expect in our society that are fundamental to the function of a democratic and a functioning society, and media are one of them. And the media's sort of abject collapse in this country, with essentially almost no commentary and no attention paid to that, is a thing. If our streets were full of holes, you know, if the sewers weren't working, if you turn on the tap and brown water came out, but there would be a sort of sense of public outrage about the collapse of essential infrastructure, that you'd have people marching on City Hall. We haven't had that about media, because in part media in this country don't report on and talk about themselves. So 10,000 journalists have lost their jobs in the last 5 to 8 years, depending on whose data you believe. So that's where work like Marx, and I'd like to think work like mine, and some others, have a role to play in the kind of elevation in the public discourse about what has gone wrong with our media. And I don't lament the loss of the business model that we're just saying finally goodbye to. It's been a long time in this country since the model that we've been used to has produced good journalism, like uniformly good journalism and actually good newspapers. We live in what the rest of the world thinks of as one of the most livable cities in the world, and a sophisticated city. Certainly, given our real estate prices, you would think that we live in one of the best cities in the world. And we have some of the worst media in the world. We have the most unsophisticated, dull and completely sort of tone-deaf media in the world. So do I want the post-media model to just hang on a bit longer? No, I wish the thing would die. Do I need the Vancouver Sun and Province to still exist? No, I don't read them. I have no interest in them anymore. They are beyond, they're gone as far as I'm concerned. And they're gone partly because, as Marx says, they're still profitable as individual units, but by the time you package them into a corporately concentrated unit like Post Media, they are basically feeding their profits back into a money-losing operation. It's losing money because its individual entities make money, but that concentration...
It's the debt. The debt, which is held by U.S. hedge funds.
Right. And then also Conrad Black's vanity project, the National Post, has always lost money, except for one quarter in 14 years where they made money. So these... We actually have newspapers in the city that make money, but you wouldn't know that because they've been basically hollowed out by a corporation that loses money. So we don't need them anymore. I wish they'd just go away. My former colleagues who still work there, they can get buyouts, I hope. And maybe they can come and work for a decent, independent news organization, maybe like Discourse Media, if we can figure that out. Or maybe we can find some investors in Vancouver. There's a lot of rich people here who would actually invest in a locally owned newspaper as opposed to a corporately owned chain newspaper. So that's the only way we'll have a good newspaper in this town again, is if it is not associated with a big chain, but if it's a locally owned and invested in newspaper which cares about the city. So we're a long way away from that. So what does come next? I mean, it's clearly going to be digital. There are already in Vancouver digital publications like the Tyee that have been in business for 13 or 14 years that are actually world leaders. Weird thing for Canada to think about, but the Tyee is a world leader in both digital journalism and solutions journalism, which I think Bob or Mark referred to before. Journalism isn't always about catching bad guys. It can also be about pointing to solutions. So the Tyee, the National Observer, Discourse Media that I'm working for now, DSmog blog, there are other small breakout entities in this country which we're punching way above our weight. There's nothing like this in the rest of the country. And so it is going to be all digital for the most part. There could be a good newspaper come up out of something, out of the ruins. The question, of course, becomes how do you monetize journalism when you're not selling classified ads and you're not selling display advertising and you're not prostituting yourself to either the advertising community or to large investors who want 12, 15, 20% back on their dollar. So that's the issue before us now. It's not, there's no magic solution. We're going to see a bunch of brave innovations. We're already seeing those. I think the ones I've already listed are among them. They're probably not going to be the only ones. Obviously, there are some parts of the internet that are absolute money machines. You know, there's no lack of money circulating in that area. The question is, what is the mechanism by which we attach some of that money to paying for good journalism? So that's the issue that confronts us now. The final thing I'd say is that, two things, sorry. Do we need good journalism? Do we even care about journalism at all? Our world is getting more complex, not less. You can look either side of our border in any direction you want. The world is getting vastly more complex, and people want various ways in which they can help make sense of the world, and journalism still, in my opinion, is one of the fastest, best ways to make sense of our world, if you can rely upon the journalism you're getting. So the question to Canadians in some ways is not do we need journalism. I think we can answer that we absolutely do. So the second question is, are we prepared to pay for it? So we need Canadians, not everybody. There's plenty of people who are prepared to just, you know, click on cat pictures or whatever. But there has to be a core of Canadians who are concerned enough about the way our country functions, concerned about the world, the way the world functions, our place in the world, our both what we receive by our place in the world, which is not always good, but what we can offer the world, which can be good. How do we make sense of that, and how do we contribute in a constructive way, and how do we actually run a democracy in the full glare of public accountability in this country? So do we care enough? Are there enough of us who care about that to pay for good journalism? I hope so, because if there aren't, then what comes next after the decline of legacy media is maybe nothing, or maybe it's the rise of more websites like Breitbart, who are taking credit for actually putting Trump in the White House. Mm-hmm. Breitbart is now going to Germany and France because they think they can put candidates into the DC Palace and into the legislature in Germany. So, you know, there will be something that comes next, but unless we're prepared to pay for good journalism, there won't be anything we want to see.
And that was Ian Gill, a columnist for the TIE and president of Discourse Media. Ian Gill, along with Mark Edge, appeared at an event hosted by the People's Co-op Bookstore on November 29th. The two were speaking about their new books on the present and future state of Canadian media.
The crisis is that model has gone away because it was always a flawed model. I mean, how can you ever imagine that the selling of classified ads and display advertising was a mechanism by which you paid for journalism to happen? That's a weird corporate sort of just coexistence at any level. And there were a lot of tensions built into that level that we all lived and breathed and everything else and survived. But by the same token, you know, how is it that the CBC, a public broadcaster, can also be beholden to advertisers in the same way that market-based broadcasters are and competing for the same dollar? So there's been a bunch of inherent tensions in the journalism model for about as long as journalism has been going on. And in my book, what I try to do is actually articulate, okay, no news is bad news is the kind of cheap trick of the title. The subtitle, which is Canada's Media Collapse and What Comes Next, is hopefully the more interesting thing. And I don't profess to be smart enough to know exactly what comes next. But there has been a media collapse, there's no doubt about that. Even though most of our media are privately owned, I consider this to be sort of public infrastructure. Our media are part of the essential infrastructure of a democratic society. The Knight Foundation in 2009 in the US did an extensive study about the importance of media in relation to democracy, and found very clearly and very concisely, and said, you know, that our media, our access to news and information to make sense of our world, are as important to our democracy and to the function of our societies as electricity, you know, clean water, you know, firefighters and everything else. There are basic things that we expect in our society that are fundamental to the function of a democratic and a functioning society, and media are one of them. And the media's sort of abject collapse in this country, with essentially almost no commentary and no attention paid to that, is a thing. If our streets were full of holes, you know, if the sewers weren't working, if you turn on the tap and brown water came out, but there would be a sort of sense of public outrage about the collapse of essential infrastructure, that you'd have people marching on City Hall. We haven't had that about media, because in part media in this country don't report on and talk about themselves. So 10,000 journalists have lost their jobs in the last 5 to 8 years, depending on whose data you believe. So that's where work like Marx, and I'd like to think work like mine, and some others, have a role to play in the kind of elevation in the public discourse about what has gone wrong with our media. And I don't lament the loss of the business model that we're just saying finally goodbye to. It's been a long time in this country since the model that we've been used to has produced good journalism, like uniformly good journalism, and actually good newspapers. We live in what the rest of the world thinks of as one of the most livable cities in the world, and a sophisticated city. Certainly, given our real estate prices, you would think that we live in one of the best cities in the world. And we have some of the worst media in the world. We have the most unsophisticated, dull and completely sort of tone-deaf media in the world. So do I want the post-media model to just hang on a bit longer? No, I wish the thing would die. Do I need the Vancouver Sun and Province to still exist? No, I don't read them. I have no interest in them anymore. They are beyond, they're gone as far as I'm concerned. And they're gone partly because, as Marx says, they're still profitable as individual units, but by the time you package them into a corporately concentrated unit like Post Media, they are basically feeding their profits back into a money-losing operation. It's losing money because its individual entities make money, but that concentration...
It's the debt. The debt, which is held by U.S. hedge funds.
Right. And then also Conrad Black's vanity project, the National Post, has always lost money, except for one quarter in 14 years where they made money. So these... We actually have newspapers in the city that make money, but you wouldn't know that because they've been basically hollowed out by a corporation that loses money. So we don't need them anymore. I wish they'd just go away. My former colleagues who still work there, they can get buyouts, I hope. And maybe they can come and work for a decent, independent news organization, maybe like Discourse Media, if we can figure that out. Or maybe we can find some investors in Vancouver. There's a lot of rich people here who would actually invest in a locally owned newspaper as opposed to a corporately owned chain newspaper. So that's the only way we'll have a good newspaper in this town again, is if it is not associated with a big chain, but if it's a locally owned and invested in newspaper which cares about the city. So we're a long way away from that. So what does come next? I mean, it's clearly going to be digital. There are already in Vancouver digital publications like the Tyee that have been in business for 13 or 14 years that are actually world leaders. Weird thing for Canada to think about, but the Tyee is a world leader in both digital journalism and solutions journalism, which I think Bob or Mark referred to before. Journalism isn't always about catching bad guys. It can also be about pointing to solutions. So the Tyee, the National Observer, Discourse Media that I'm working for now, DSmog blog, there are other small breakout entities in this country which we're punching way above our weight. There's nothing like this in the rest of the country. And so it is going to be all digital for the most part. There could be a good newspaper come up out of something, out of the ruins. And the question, of course, becomes how do you monetize journalism when you're not selling classified ads and you're not selling display advertising and you're not prostituting yourself to either the advertising community or to large investors who want 12, 15, 20% back on their dollar. So that's the issue before us now. It's not, there's no magic solution. We're going to see a bunch of brave innovations. We're already seeing those. I think the ones I've already listed are among them. They're probably not going to be the only ones. Obviously, there are some parts of the internet that are absolute money machines. You know, there's no lack of money circulating in that area. The question is, what is the mechanism by which we attach some of that money to paying for good journalism? So that's the issue that confronts us now. The final thing I'd say is that, two things, so do we need good journalism? Do we even care about journalism at all? Our world is getting more complex, not less. You can look either side of our border in any direction you want. The world is getting vastly more complex, and people want various ways in which they can help make sense of the world, and journalism still, in my opinion, is one of the fastest, best ways to make sense of our world, if you can rely upon the journalism you're getting. So the question to Canadians in some ways is not do we need journalism. I think we can answer that we absolutely do. So the second question is, are we prepared to pay for it? So we need Canadians, not everybody. There's plenty of people who are prepared to just click on cat pictures or whatever. But there has to be a core of Canadians who are concerned enough about the way our country functions, concerned about the world, the way the world functions, our place in the world, what we receive by our place in the world, which is not always good, but what we can offer the world, which can be good. How do we make sense of that, and how do we contribute in a constructive way, and how do we actually run a democracy in the full glare of public accountability in this country? So do we care enough? Are there enough of us who care about that to pay for good journalism? I hope so, because if there aren't, then what comes next after the decline of legacy media is maybe nothing, or maybe it's the rise of more websites like Breitbart, who are taking credit for actually putting Trump in the White House. Mm-hmm. Breitbart is now going to Germany and France because they think they can put candidates into the Elysee Palace and into the legislature in Germany. So there will be something that comes next, but unless we're prepared to pay for good journalism, there won't be anything we want to see.
And that was Ian Gill, a columnist for The Tyee and president of Discourse Media. Ian Gill, along with Mark Edge, appeared at an event hosted by the People's Co-op Bookstore on November 29th. The two were speaking about their new books on the present and future state of Canadian media.